Welcome to the Austin Therapy Podcast. I'm Teresa, and I have a background in social work, and I'm joined by
Kate, and I have a background in psychology. And today we're talking about chapter 12, 13, and 14 of Northanger Abbey. Hooray!
We're back at it for another episode. Here we go.
Yeah, Teresa. Were these better chapters?
I was less angry in these chapters. I was still a little angry, but I wasn't like ragingly angry like I was in the last ones. So I think it's an improvement, although it does make me wonder if these were just some gentle chapters because I'm going to get angry again in the future.
I mean, we haven't reached the book's climax, so you may get angry again.
I assume as much. I mean, we're not quite halfway through, but we're almost halfway through. So I assume the climax is coming relatively soon. So that's about a halfway point type thing.
Why do you think the climax is coming relatively soon? Do you not remember how
Jane Austen writes?
Yeah, like those last few chapters of Pride and Prejudice where everything felt really condensed.
I guess, I mean, okay. But because that's my only experience, I think I'm hoping for something different, especially since this is her first novel.
But, I mean, that's not the format of even a romance book.
Shh.
Third act.
I know it's third act, but I just want, I want to know what's going to happen. I feel like this book, I have less of a sense of what's going to happen. I have some clues and some bits and pieces in here of, like, we know that this is a gothic parody and so I'm expecting bad things to happen. I talked a lot last episode about thinking everyone's a murderer, but no one's murdered yet or been murdered yet.
That you know of.
I guess, but like, we don't have that much book left for someone to die and be murdered and them to figure out who it was. Or maybe they never figure it out and it just ends on a really horrible cliffhanger and then I'm going to be mad at you.
I'm not going to answer any of those things.
Great. That's real helpful, Kate. Thank you. Well, maybe we'll just dive into the chapters we have now, and then I'll talk about my predictions at the very end. So the very first thing I wrote down was, oh, right, we're mad. Because, you know, we release an episode every 2 weeks, which means we record probably every 2 weeks. So it's been a little bit since I was ragingly angry. And then as soon as Catherine's like, right, I have to go apologize to Miss Tilney, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm really angry. Brought right back into it.
Yeah. And I really think this speaks to Catherine's character that she's probably been awake most of the night just thinking about, okay, I'm going to have to go and apologize. What am I going to say? Oh, my God, I'm mortified. And the thing that I really loved in these chapters was Catherine.
Yeah, she definitely stands up for herself in this one and seems to be relying on more trustworthy people around her, or presumably more trustworthy people around her. I don't know. The Allens could be evil monsters. We don't know. But right now, they don't seem like evil monsters. So who knows?
Right.
You know, like taking Miss Allen's advice, even at the very start here, of Miss Tilney always wears white, so you should wear white too, because that then might ally you. I don't necessarily know if that's like a really crucial piece of advice. I think it's kind of throwaway, but from Mrs. Allen's perspective and position, it makes a lot of sense. So I kind of get it.
Right. Like, that's Mrs. Allen trying her best to be helpful.
And so it is sweet. You can tell at least she's trying. She might not be good at it, but at least she's trying. And then I had this feeling, and it kind of came true, that I wrote down, it feels too easy when Catherine's like, I'm going to go to their house and it's going to be fine and I'll apologize and everything will be great. And here we go, like, do, 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 on my way, on my way, on my way. And then Miss Tilney's like, I'm not going to see you. And I was like, yeah, that seems accurate. That feels accurate.
Yeah. And I like Catherine when she sees her. Because she sends up her card and then the servant's like, no, I was mistaken. She's not at home. And then she sees her just a little bit later leaving the house. So Catherine knows she's been lied to. She goes through this like, oh my God, how rude. No, I guess I was rude. Oh, does that mean that we're not going to be friends? And like, she's dejected more than she feels rejected.
Yes. Which I think is pretty reasonable and felt fitting for, like, if I was Miss Tilney, and maybe it's because I'm a petty bitch, I'd probably have done the same thing of like, no, I'm not talking to you today. I don't have time for this right now in my life. We can find a time that's convenient for me, but don't just show up at my house expecting to be seen and that I'm going to forgive you.
Right.
Granted, maybe it's a little different back in that era, but nowadays, if someone showed up at my doorstep and was like, I want to see you to apologize to you, I'd be like, what the fuck are you doing at my house? Like, send me a text. I don't understand.
To be fair, I think anyone who owes you an apology would have to fly to see you. If someone that you were, like, let's say, goodish friends with showed up at your house to apologize. And I get that that's not true because this relationship's been quite short. But socializing in that sort of, like, you would make calls on people was not uncommon.
Yeah, and I can see that.
That was very much part of the culture of, like, visiting with each other.
Well, and it does get explained that part of the reason that Miss Tilney says no is that she's about to leave the house with her father. And so, I mean, I also get that, but I think that's the risk of showing up randomly at someone's house. They might not see you. They might not be home. That's just how it is in that time. And then she goes to the theater and Tilney's not there. And then suddenly he shows up. Why is he showing up late to the theater? Seems strange to me. Where was he?
So The Thing About Austin does a great episode on the theater where they kind of describe that this is really common because there's different sections and different plays that get done at different times. So it'd be like, and this is me not remembering information well, but like having like a comedy act and then like a serious play. And then
so it's a multi-part experience that you don't have to go to each part to enjoy.
Yeah. And it's also like a very social sort of like to be seen sort of place and kind of more rowdy than we would imagine.
Okay. That makes more sense then. Because again, like sometimes it's hard for me because I don't always have the historical context to put myself into these positions of like, yeah, it's weird that he wasn't there and then showed up. And it's like, you just missed the beginning of the play. It's already almost over. What are you doing? But if it's multi-part that you don't need to see all the parts, it makes sense.
Yeah. And then Catherine basically can't stop looking over at Mr. Tilney.
Yep.
And it's obvious and cute. And Tilney's not quite so happy.
No, he like gives her a bow later from a distance. And I read that it seemed very much of a like, oh, we're done. I'm bowing.
Yeah.
But he does come over.
Yes, he comes over to, I assume the purpose of his visit was to provide his sister's excuses.
That would make sense. Because I don't think she's there, right? We didn't hear that Miss Tilney's there.
Miss Tilney's not there.
He's probably coming over to say like, oh, my sister couldn't see you today because she was going out. And then Catherine just kind of explodes on him. I'm so sorry. Everything was horrible. Here's what happened. You must think I'm so rude. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And all I wrote was, breathe, Catherine. Breathe. Deep breaths. It's going to be okay.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, poor Catherine.
There's a little part of me that wonders if Tilney is coming over also to get an explanation. He's going to at least offer her that chance because he seems more sedate in this reaction, at least at the start. But I wonder if he's kind of like, well, I need to hear if there's an explanation because I didn't actually think she was this silly of a girl and see what she has to say.
Then he like kind of pokes at her a little bit of like, well, it was nice of you to wish us a good walk when you passed us. And it borders for me on like both teasing and a little bit of like, oh no, I'm kind of angry about that part. He's walking that fine line between those two things. It doesn't seem super flirtatiously teasing.
No, this to me was almost like him being like, really? You want me to believe you?
And then she goes on to explain what happened. And her explanation is very factual.
I would have jumped out and run after you.
Right? A little dramatic.
Yes, Catherine is.
Everyone in this book is a little dramatic, though.
Do you think the Tilneys are?
I think they could be. I think Mr. Tilney in particular is playful in a way that could then get portrayed as dramatic.
Okay. He definitely is playful. I think Catherine kind of wins him over with her ridiculous explanations, mm-hmm. because jumping out of a cart and running after people is not proper behavior
and not normal.
So I think he's probably like, nobody would say that unless it were true. And he kind of softens a little bit. And I really like this line. Is there a Henry in the world who could be insensible to such a declaration?
I know, I starred that also as a good line. I liked that one. It's very sweet.
I very much like examining Henry Tilney and his interactions from the perspective of healthy communication and healthy repair.
Mm.
And for whatever reason that he did come over, whether it was to offer his sister's consideration of like, sorry, she feels bad that she didn't get to see you, or if it's because he wants to give Catherine a chance, he opens up the door for a repair to happen. And he's been mad, but he's not holding stubbornly.
This to me shows that he seems like a decent judge of character. He can tell that Catherine's not lying to him. I think about if Isabella, she was the one that Tilney had been pursuing and this had happened with her, like, I don't think he'd believe any of her explanations because there isn't that genuineness. Whereas I think he can feel that and read that from Catherine.
I think Catherine has this advantage of being someone who grew up in the country, who doesn't fully understand the etiquette. So therefore she doesn't mask and she's never learned that skill. And it actually really serves her well because it shows how genuine she is, because she says ridiculous things like, there's no one else I would rather be talking to. I would have jumped out of the carriage and ran after you. Like these very not flirtatious things that she's saying. She is just genuinely like, no, I like you better.
Yeah, which is really sweet. I'm liking their love story. It's very cute. I also, though, if it ended up being like a summer fling type thing, I wouldn't feel mad about that.
They're forming a friendship more than there's a ton of romantic feels.
Right. It's less like, I passionately love you versus, huh, we kind of like each other. This is cool. We get along.
This is kind of like when Darcy started talking about books to Elizabeth and Lizzie actually knowing that there was some flirting conversation going on and that actually happened.
Right. If those two understood each other.
Yeah, this is two people on the same page.
That is an excellent explanation.
We talked a little bit last time about how you felt like Tilney being like, marriage is the same as dance, was like too intense. And I think these three chapters kind of demonstrate that the pacing of their relationship is actually going really well, because you never feel like they're somehow madly deeply in love after only knowing each other for like two evenings and a walk.
Yeah, I think this feels more realistic to how I expect a love story to go.
Well paced. I really like how Tilney diffuses the very end of the conversation around Catherine being perceptive and just calling him out, kind of like, hey, if your sister could forgive me and she didn't take offense and she thought there must have been a mistake, why are you angry? And he's like, me? Take offense? And she's like, you looked so angry. You were so mad. And he was like, I had no right. And she was like, anyone who saw your face would have assumed that you did. And I think this is really cute because Catherine's kind of like naively also being like, hey, you like me too, because otherwise you wouldn't have been that mad. And that he basically is like, move over, let me sit down. The complete softening of it is they had a conversation about anger. I don't know. Like, for me, that's like magic gold, that he's being flirty and funny about having been upset.
Well, and I think that it does show that they both can diffuse the tension well with each other, which I think bodes well for a relationship where they can still talk about difficult things, but it doesn't have to be super intense. And they can call each other out a little bit.
Yeah. Catherine is soft and naive in moments, but these two just like very much seem to be on the same page. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's very sweet. It's very cute.
Yeah, and then John Thorpe shows up.
Take this very nice moment and everything comes crashing down. My response to John Thorpe, although rageful, is written very similarly as my response to Collins of like, fuck off, go away. I just don't want you here. And I think that's my response to characters, and I think male characters in particular, who are entitled. Like, I don't have the patience for these types of characters. And I get why they're here. The book doesn't really function without a John Thorpe. I get it. But I'm mad about him and I don't like him.
Yeah. I mean, that's the reaction you're supposed to have to John Thorpe. And let's also keep in mind, neither does Catherine. Catherine doesn't like this guy. And every time he comes around, she's like, please get away from me, as much as she politely can.
Well, and he keeps trying to like stake this claim and his alliance to her or his relationship with her, and keeps trying to be like, oh, you're the prettiest girl in the room. And I actually think that's a horrible compliment to Catherine, because I don't actually think she cares about that. I think she cares, but I think there are ways to compliment her that would go further.
I think the thing is that Catherine is very grounded, even though she's also very not, because like we said, she's dramatic. But Catherine knows, realistically, she's not the finest girl in Bath. She knows she's not the most beautiful human out there by this society's standards. So if you gave her a soft compliment like, oh, you look really pretty in that dress, she'd be way happier and believe you more than if you're like, you're the most beautiful person in the room. But both John Thorpe and Isabella Thorpe do this to Catherine.
It's not quite this, because I think this term is not quite right, but it's almost love bombing. Of like, they're trying to overly attributing things and overly placing value on her looks, her appearance, that isn't reality based.
They both do love bomb as well. And I think you're right. Like, John Thorpe is essentially what he's attempting to do. It's, I don't know. John Thorpe's creepy. But Isabella has done this love bombing across the way. Like, if we look back at her conversation with Catherine, where she was like putting down her friend and then talking about how close they are, even though they'd only known each other for a couple of weeks. This is a pattern that these two have of trying to deepen an attachment that's not real.
Try and deepen your sense of the attachment without actually deepening the attachment, because I don't actually think they genuinely want it to be more attached.
I don't think they're people who understand what true attachment is. Not that this is an excuse for things, but these two very clearly have wounded attachment because they can't form attachments. They don't seem to genuinely like anyone unless they're getting something from it.
Yeah. And I think in that, they show just how selfish they are, that they will always put themselves first and their own best interests first, which we see a lot in chapter 13. We have them devising this scheme to go off to Clifton again, and they make this whole plan. This line here was, Catherine only remained to be apprised of it. So like, they make this whole plan without considering her or even asking her or making the plan with her, and are just like, yeah, I guess we'll tell her when we tell her. It'll be fine.
Well, the assumption being Catherine will do what we tell her to do.
Exactly.
And such controlling behavior.
Yeah. Well, and it's written, her agreement was demanded, right? It is not her agreement was sought or appreciated. No, it was demanded. They must have her agreement to this, because otherwise everything will be ruined. And I love Catherine in this chapter, because she's like, no, fuck all of you. I'm not going. You made this plan without me. I have other plans. You've already fucked that up for me once.
By lying to me.
I'm not doing this again. I'm not bending to you. Like, I have a plan. I have something I want to do. Sorry. Figure out another option. You've got sisters. Take them.
and offering them compromises, like, let's go a different day. And she's like, do not urge me, Isabella. I am engaged. They just keep pushing and pushing and pushing.
Yeah, they won't take no for an answer. Isabella takes many different tacks around it of like, well, but you're my best friend, so I'd love to have you there, and that would be so great. And then getting kind of angry and mean to her about it. And it's like, why do you think that's going to work better than being nice about it? How about you just compromise? Oh, wait, you can't because you don't have those skills.
That she automatically goes to basically the wound of, if you don't come, it means you don't love me. And these two are so abusive. I think I was thinking about this while I was reading. John Thorpe and Isabella Thorpe, maybe some of the characters I hate the most, but also they are just so obviously bad people. Whereas like Wickham, you're not sure.
Right. He's a sneaky villain.
Right. And these two are frustrating because they're so forceful, but they're just much more obviously abusive individuals.
Yes. I think what frustrates me about them a lot too is that other people don't seem to see it as much as Catherine does. Right? Like, I got mad at James in this chapter because he joins in on the Thorpes against Catherine and is like, what are you doing, dude? Your sister's trying to be entirely reasonable, asking for and offering many different options. She's just laid a boundary about like, I can't do this with you tomorrow. And then you start being like, well, you're a selfish sister, and I thought you were the most reasonable of my sisters, but I guess not. Such a dick move.
Yeah, James doesn't look great in these chapters.
No, I dislike James intensely in these chapters.
He does not stand by his sister at all.
Mm-hmm.
And he joins in on the bullying. And I will ask that we put a pin in this so that we can bring it up in the next three chapters. Because I want to reflect back on this point and maybe offer a deeper conversation around James's behavior here, because I think James has been around John Thorpe at school and this is his friend. He hung out at their house for like a summer, like on summer break. So like he's been around these people for a while and more often than he's been around his sister.
Well, and he's starting to form this attachment with Isabella. And so he may also be thinking like, well, if this is my future bride, then I should take her side and follow through with what she wants.
So the Thorpes keep pushing and pushing.
Yep.
Yeah, Catherine, she feels like shit, but she stands her ground.
Yep. And line of, if I am wrong, I am doing what I believe to be right.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, fine, like, you can tell me I'm wrong, you can tell me that this isn't right, but this to me feels like the right thing to do. I'm gonna stay in this conviction of like, I've made this choice, this is what I'm doing.
And then Isabella's response, which is, I suspect there is no great struggle. She's basically saying that she thinks Catherine's being selfish, and Catherine pulls away from her.
I think what the Thorpes do an excellent job is they are excellent projectors. And so their behavior, essentially telling Catherine she's being selfish for saying no to this, is really actually just Isabella projecting the fact that she's being extremely selfish by not being willing to compromise or change her mind or work with Catherine around this, or have at least included Catherine in the original decision making.
I think this very much solidifies again that Catherine is just a means to an end for them. They do not consider or respect her as an individual.
No. And in all honesty, Catherine to me feels very interchangeable and exchangeable to the Thorpes.
Yeah.
If it's not Catherine, it's someone else.
I think it's really interesting because one of the signs of predators within communities is that they target new individuals. And Catherine is new, which means she's more malleable. She's going to follow Isabella's lead. And this is the first real time that Catherine hasn't. And we've seen it before where Catherine's like, this is weird behavior, but I guess I'll go along with it. And Catherine is realizing the consequences of putting up boundaries with people who have been taking advantage of you.
Which is not an easy thing to do. It's extremely difficult and painful to go through.
Right.
And then Thorpe steals the show and decides, oh, I'll just go do it myself. I'll just go tell Miss Tilney you're going to walk with her on Tuesday and come back after I've secured that agreement. And what I will say is I didn't really believe that he actually went and did it. I figured he was actually just lying about it and had like gone off to the bathroom and was like, aha, I've thought of an excellent solution. I'll just tell her they'll walk on Tuesday and then it'll be fine.
Yeah, I love that Catherine's reaction is, what the fuck?
And is like, no, I'm going to go correct that right now because that was a dick move.
Yeah. And then they physically try to stop her.
Yeah. And I will say, this is the one second where James stops Thorpe from, after she's broken free, from like continuing to pursue her. And I was like, well, finally, like, for fuck's sake, James, now you're jumping in. You could have just stopped all of this.
I wonder if there's a part of him that recognizes that Thorpe crossed the line, especially because that's what Catherine kind of says before she leaves. I do not care. Mr. Thorpe had no business to invent any such message. If I had thought it right to put it off, I would have spoken to Miss Tilney myself. This is only doing it in a ruder way. And how do I know that Mr. Thorpe has? He may be mistaking again, perhaps. He led me into an act of rudeness by his mistake on Friday. Let me go, Mr. Thorpe. Isabella, do not hold me. Like, she lays out all of the things that they have done to offend her. And how can you trust this guy? James, this guy lied to me on Friday.
Well, and also, like, you think of the time period, he's just laid hands on your sister and is physically holding her. Like, in no sense is this an appropriate behavior. It's still not today. But physical contact between unrelated people of opposite sexes is even more heightened as a decorum and principle thing in this era. And then for it to be forcefully unconsented physical touch, it is so many layers of not appropriate.
Well, I think this very easily indicates to me that left to their own devices, Isabella and John Thorpe would be physically abusive people.
Oh, yeah.
That their first reaction to stop her was just grab her. It was like, okay. Like, it wasn't like block her way or yell at her. It was very much a physical intervention right away.
Which is kind of terrifying.
They're scary people.
They're really scary people. We don't like them. We do not like them at all. But she does get away, which is good. She manages to get to the Tilney's house. And again, she's like, kind of just barges into their home.
She like follows them through the doorstep. And she's just like, because basically the door gets left open.
And she just like runs up behind them. It's like, hello, I'm here. And then like spews out all this stuff. And again, I wrote like, deep breath, Catherine, deep breath. Oh, poor Catherine. She's such a mess.
There's definitely a layer of comedy in everything that Catherine does because she's just kind of got this layer of ridiculousness about her.
Mm-hmm. Which I just love. And I did write, the Tilney's response is actually quite kind. And it just like makes me more endeared to their family. And Mr. Tilney, I actually had been a little wary of whether or not Mr. Tilney would like her or not. And part of that was John Thorpe said, like, well, he thought you were really beautiful. And I agreed. And I was like, oh, that's a lie. I don't trust anything that comes out of this guy's mouth. So it must be a bold-faced lie. They probably didn't even talk about Catherine. I'm most certain he was not like, oh, yes, that is the most beautiful lady in the room. But I just assumed like, meh, he probably does hate her. That makes sense. But he was very nice and kind to her, even invites her to dinner.
Yeah, because this is our first real encounter with General Tilney. That's your first impression that he's nicer than you thought he was going to be?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I mean, there is some of it of like, he was going to fire the servant who let her up if she hadn't explained what was going on. I was like, that feels a little harsh, but okay, jury's a little out on him, but he seems fine. And I did write, he offers for her to stay and have dinner and to hang out with Miss Tilney. And Catherine, ever the rule follower, is like, oh, actually, the Allens are expecting me home, so I have to get home. And I think it's just very sweet.
Yeah, which is, like, I think also kind of funny that Catherine's been running around Bath, breaking all of these rules of etiquette. And now she's like, no, I have to go home. We're having supper together, like, with my neighbors.
Right? Like, it's very strange.
I don't know if it's strange so much as it is, like, sweet. Catherine not really quite acting like an adult yet.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like, I haven't gotten permission to play with you.
Yes, like, I need to go home and ask permission.
Which, like, for her age, she's 17, that fits really well. Which is, like, a piece of why I think she carries that sort of, like, I don't even know if it's naivety, just wholesomeness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of what I read when she's like, I have to go home when the Allens are expecting me. I read, like, a very wholesome country girl.
And goes home. Now she's all worried about, I pissed off my brother and our friends. And did I make the right decision? I'm not sure. And she asks the Allens. And I was like, oh, thank God the Allens come through on this. And Mr. Allen in particular.
She asks Mr. Allen. I think that's important to note that she has kind of asked Mrs. Allen along the way what she should do. She asked her before she went on the carriage ride. And Mrs. Allen was just kind of like,
do what you want to do.
So I think it's important that we're noting that it's Mr. Allen she's talking to.
I did write that I like Mr. Allen.
Yeah.
He seems like a good chaperone.
I don't know if he's exactly a good chaperone because he hasn't really been around much, but he's good at giving, like, old man advice.
Right. He's not a great chaperone.
Right.
But he's an okay chaperone.
Yeah.
He does kind of get what the rules are of society. And also when she's like, oh, maybe I should call Isabella and tell her, like, this is not appropriate behavior. And they're like, let her make her own decisions.
Yes. And he's very much, like, understanding also, like, the social of, you're going to cause a bigger fight.
Yeah, that's going to be worse. I do think Mr. Allen is, like, a little bit the voice of reason in these chapters for Catherine.
I think it's really interesting, and I wonder if this is maybe the Allens balancing themselves out, that because Mrs. Allen's like, oh yes, you probably shouldn't have gone, like, an open carriage, that's a bad thing. And Catherine's like, why didn't you say that the first time? And Mrs. Allen's like, oh, kids these days, like, you have to let them have a little bit of fun. And just puts me in this position of thinking, like, is Mrs. Allen wrong? Did she sit and calculate, like, is this bad in that she's going to end up when she doesn't want to marry? Or is this just bad in that it's not the smartest thing to do socially, but Catherine has no reputation, so who cares?
I don't think Mrs. Allen is that smart to think of either of those things. I think she probably was just like, whatever. I don't know if she actually thought about any of this.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I guess I'm not saying, like, thought about it in terms of, like, a pro and con list. But in that moment when Catherine was going off for a carriage ride up to a castle, I don't think she was worried. And I want to give Mrs. Allen the credit of saying that if she were worried, I think she would say something.
Okay. I do think she would say something if she was worried. However, I think her barometer for being worried or becoming worried is exceedingly high.
Okay.
It would take a lot for her to actually be worried. So when we might think she needs to say something, she might not.
Yeah.
And then we finally get our walk, which is excellent. Very happy about this walk with the Tilneys.
What did you enjoy?
I appreciated how opposite it is to her conversations with the Thorpes.
Is an actual conversation.
Well, yes. But particularly, they talk about books. And Catherine essentially has the same prompt for the conversation as she did with John Thorpe and with Isabella about, let's talk about Udolpho. That was such a good book. And she goes in with this expectation that Mr. Tilney is going to be like, oh yeah, books, whatever. Novels, eh. And then he's able to engage and able to express eloquently why reading novels is a joy and a pleasure and something that should be done by the masses, by everyone.
And he's like, men who deny it are just denying it. They read just as many books as women do.
And I think he's thoughtful in this, Mr. Tilney. I think he's a little flirtatious. There is one moment where I was like, oh, this feels a little creepy. It's when he talks about when I was going to Oxford and you were just a good little girl working your sampler at home. I'm like, oh, that feels icky. Do not call to the age difference here, sir. Just feels gross to me.
He was 18 and she was like 12.
They're not 18 and 12 anymore, but it's just a weird thing to call to.
He is 10 years old. Well, 9 years older than her.
I know. I just didn't need that reminder, I guess. Because she's so young. You know, even Miss Tilney's like, oh, he's treating you exactly like he does his sister. And it's both endearing but weird. There's a sense of closeness and familiarity, which is nice. But also, if he was romantically interested in her, treating her like his sister, probably not a great way to start a romantic relationship.
Which is fair. And I think, like we were saying, they're forming a friendship first. He's teasing and maybe a little bit more tamely because his sister is there. And she's trying to reassure Catherine, please know my brother is not this much of an asshole. He is joking.
Yes. Which I think is very sweet. She does urge him to explain himself a little bit better. Don't let her leave this situation thinking this is how you actually are. Because this is not great, dude.
Yeah, she kind of like helps him in that moment of like, Henry, come on.
If you really want her, maybe this isn't the way. Or at least don't let her leave thinking you are this way.
I love him. Do you note that we have made a name jump? We've transitioned from Mr. Tilney only a couple chapters ago to Henry.
Yes, which I think is very sweet. There is a closeness developing, which is great.
Yeah.
Although they're still using Miss Moreland for Catherine.
Well, and let's be clear that Catherine is not calling him Henry. The narrator is.
So they're not on that familiarity yet.
No.
But we're getting there. Yeah. Which is nice.
Then Catherine kind of fangirls about horror books, gothic novels, and Henry kind of teases her here. The nicest, huh?
Yeah, he pays a lot of attention to the words that she's using. And again, Miss Tilney has to be like, okay, Catherine, what's really happening here is that my brother actually understands what you asked. He's just being a dick about it.
I love this interaction with the siblings of him doing that. And then Catherine, who knows that he's a very teasing person already, just getting this extra layer of Miss Tilney being like, he's being a prick. And, like, it's very playful and demonstrates a genuine closeness between the siblings. It's just very cute, very rom-com-y, healthy relationship. And if we're like comparing to the brother and sister who have been in Catherine's life up till now, the Thorpes, this relationship feels much more like there is a relationship. Isabella and John don't seem to have any deep connection. Tilneys have a deep connection between the two of them.
And I do think actually this also strengthens Catherine's relationships individually to both. I think that it strengthens her relationship to Tilney because he's still kind of being flirty. But then also Miss Tilney can be a little bit more, oh, let's go off. Let's just talk the two of us like he's being a dick. Let's just be friends, which I really liked. I think that that's a nice connection that's starting to form between all three of them.
Yeah, they're like a little trio.
It's who I'd like her to spend more time with, not the Thorpes.
What do you think about instruction when you're younger being torment?
I thought it was kind of interesting, and I liked Catherine bringing up the perspective of a lot of my learning experience was at home with my mother, who had six other younger children, and trying to teach them how to read, and how painful that was to see. It is torture. It is torment. But I also, I see Tilney's point of like, And had you not gone through that, you couldn't enjoy the books you're enjoying. You couldn't read the way you're reading. So like they have their trade-offs. So maybe it's a necessary evil.
Right. And Catherine doesn't disagree. She agrees in that. But I do think it's highlighting again that Catherine is talking about things that she's not supposed to talk about and just being very genuine. And it endears the Tilneys to her.
I think the special thing, or the thing I like the most about Catherine, is that she feels very authentic and genuine.
Mm-hmm.
And at times that's naive, but I think I would rather a naive character who's being true and genuine to who they are than a well-versed character who isn't being true to who they are. So I can put up with the naivete.
Then they talk about art.
And she's a little lost in the conversation.
And there's a bit in there where I'm like, Jane Austen, showing that you were actually part of an era. The patriarchy, the misogyny of just that men like a girl who's good looking, has a very ignorant mind.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can fill it with what they want to fill it with. It's weird. But also, I appreciate the way that it frames Henry over someone like John Thorpe.
Yes, I would agree with that. I don't know if it's that hard to frame Tilney better than John Thorpe.
That's fair. But I guess if there's going to be somebody filling my head with things when I'm 17, Tilney, who seems like he wants to have a balance of making sure that you are happy mm-hmm. with what you are learning and what you are gaining from things. Like, I think if Catherine hadn't shown much interest, I don't think he would have wished it. But also, it's weird.
Reading period pieces will always have weird. Granted, I mean, is that different nowadays? One could argue, maybe not.
I do think, though, that if a modern author put into her books that men like a pretty face and a kind heart and an empty head, that would be the bad guy who's taking it. It would be like, and that's what makes you attracted to dicks. It wouldn't be framed as like, and this was Catherine not realizing that she had many advantages.
It would be framed differently.
Or it would just very clearly be a misogynistic line. It's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. We do get our very first mention of murder in the book.
Yes. And it comes about in a very weird way.
And I think I got a little lost in this also. I was like, what is Catherine talking about? And did I miss something? Do we know what Catherine's talking about?
Okay, so they were talking about art.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a pause. And Catherine says, I've heard that something very shocking indeed will soon come out in London. And she's tying back to the earlier thread about novels, because that's all she thinks about. But Miss Tilney doesn't catch on to how Catherine's mind works in conversation.
I also apparently did not.
There's a little bit of like weirdness in that the author changes perspective and starts Henry Tilney's perspective. And like, he shortly arrived at the topic of politics, and it was an easy step to silence. And I think that sort of like transition where we don't get any of the content of what they were talking about makes it seem like a weird jump. But it's also like the framing of he started to talk about politics, and that's where Eleanor's brain is. And Catherine's brain is like, books.
Yeah.
But he gets that.
He picks it up, which is kind of cute.
Yeah. Miss Tilney is like terrified that someone's going to, like, there's going to be a report that comes out that someone's been murdered. There's going to be a riot. Someone's going to be assassinated. And Mr. Tilney, Henry's just sitting there just laughing, kind of like, you're both kind of ridiculous in very different ways.
I think it will be what makes them good friends, though. They might misunderstand each other sometimes, but I think it'll be fun.
Yeah. And then Henry explains what happened. And the misunderstanding, because Eleanor's like, you have to satisfy me and tell me what happened at this dreadful riot. And Catherine's like, riot? What riot?
How did we get here?
And Henry's like, she's talking about a book coming out. And I'm sure Eleanor was like,
This makes so much more sense.
And then when he explained that Eleanor's mind went to, like, worst case scenario, I don't know if Catherine had, like, the same sort of, oh, if she was like, I can kind of see how you got there. Catherine doesn't follow the logic, I don't think, as well.
No, poor Catherine.
Then we get Miss Tilney being like, okay, you helped us understand each other. I'm going to do something nice for you. Make sure she understands you.
And he doesn't really help his case.
Nope.
And he, like, kind of jokes around a little bit. And he gets told off of, like, be more serious. And I wrote down, is he ever really that serious? Right? Like, that is the one thing about Tilney.
I assume he can probably be businesslike when he needs to.
But I suppose in his flirting and in his engagement with potential partners, he's not particularly serious.
No, because that's not who he wants to be 95% of the time.
Well, that's not fun.
I do like the line, I think very highly of the understanding of all women in the world, especially those, whoever they may be, with whom I happen to be in company.
It's very smooth.
Yeah.
He is a smooth operator.
It's a very nice walk. It's one of my favorites. Lots of, like, back and forth and cuteness.
That's very sweet. And Catherine leaves it feeling really good. The only difficulty on Catherine's was in concealing the excess of her pleasure. Which is, like, really sweet. And I just think about those moments when, like, you're just so happy and excited and you can't stop smiling.
Yeah. She's walking on clouds. It really solidified for her. These are the people that she wants to be hanging out with.
These are the people I want her to be hanging out with.
Yeah.
We're all in agreement on this.
For sure.
And she runs into one of the younger Thorpes and essentially finds out from them, like, they still went for their ride. It was fine. One of the sisters went. She's going to have a good time. It's totally fine. And Catherine's like, look at that. That thing I suggested. Look how it worked out. Fuckers.
I don't know if Catherine thinks fuckers.
No, but I do.
She did seek her out, kind of. Like, she was anxious to make sure that her other friends were not mad with her.
I'm sure they're still mad with her, though.
But Catherine's just very sweet.
She's sweet and she's thoughtful.
We like Catherine.
We do. These were good palate cleanser chapters, I feel like, from how angry I had been.
Fair enough.
This is the reprieve I needed from the Thorpes in the last episode.
Yeah.
If the walk with the Tilneys, which, like, I get it doesn't happen in that logical order, but if that level of niceness had happened within those three chapters previously, I might not have been quite as rageful. Who knows?
I feel like if you took the Thorpes out of this book, it would just be too cozy. Which is not a bad thing. I really enjoy a good cozy romance, don't get me wrong. But to have those gothic elements to things, you need very dramatic characters. But I am interested to continue to see what your thoughts are, because there's going to be some progression and some change that I'm interested to see. I'm just really excited for you to read this book.
It sounds like we're in for some twists and some turns.
Uh-huh.
So I guess if I'm making some predictions, I don't know, maybe the Tilneys are evil. Who knows? Maybe we're in an upside down world where good is bad and bad is good. I don't know. It's possible. I think the Thorpes will come back and be royal dicks. If I'm thinking about it as a gothic parody, I think something big and evil needs to happen to Catherine. She needs to get locked away or kidnapped or something. Something big's going to happen to Catherine, and I don't quite know what. Maybe Catherine is the murderer. I haven't entertained that possibility yet, but maybe she accidentally murders someone. Maybe she accidentally murders John Thorpe. I would not be mad about that. And then maybe that's part of the issue, is that now she's a murderer and she's on the run, but she's in love with Tilney.
Would Tilney help her?
Maybe that's where General Tilney comes in. Maybe he can, I don't know, use some of his leverage, cover up the murder.
So you think that General Tilney is going to help cover up a murder?
If he has not already.
Oh.
I don't know. Someone's got to die. There's got to be a murder in this somewhere.
Okay.
I don't know who it is or who's going to do it. I'm just suspicious of everyone because I know to be.
I mean, it's a good place to be. We're going to read the next three. So 15, 16, 17.
Great. Do you have a favorite quote?
I do, but you go first.
So my favorite quote, this one, it felt very much like a Jane Austen putting words into her character's mouths type sentences, but I liked it anyways, which was, the person, be it gentleman or lady, who has not pleasure in a good novel must be intolerably stupid. That's my favorite.
So that's why I let you go first, because that was going to be mine.
We have good taste.
Yes, there was another one. Very true, said Henry. And this is a very nice day, and we are taking a very nice walk. And you two are very nice young ladies. Oh, it is a very nice word indeed. It does for everything. And I just appreciate that pedantic nature that he has, being a shithead brat. I appreciate that, because it's not done in like a pedantic, I'm going to put you down sort of way for picking up the wrong word. He's picking a word that is perfectly reasonable for Catherine to use, and he's being silly about it, but in a very bratty way. And I appreciate his bratty flirting. Does it for me.
Well, good choice. All right. Well, we are going to read the next three chapters, as Kate said. And if you want to follow us online, you can follow our Instagram at Austen Therapy Podcast. Kate also has a meme account at Austen Therapy on Instagram as well. We've been trying to post some of Kate's memes across on Instagram. I was doing quotes for a while. If people like it, let me know. Maybe I'll start it back up. Maybe I won't. I don't know. I make no promises, but hey, I'll put it out there. Let us know in the comments what you think.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming along this journey. We hope you're just as excited for Teresa to keep reading. And if this is your first time reading too, I'm super excited for you to keep reading. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye! Bye.